emergency communications.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council, and Budget Committee. Thank you. Lisa Turley, Director, Bureau of Emergency Communications. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to present this budget for the Bureau of Emergency Communications for 15-16. As you know, our total request this year is for a base budget of $23.1 million with six ad packages, three of which are one-time funded and three ongoing. Additionally, as you know, the City of Portland provides about 78.4% of our funding, with the East County partner agencies providing the balance. The mission of BOIC is to answer 911 calls, dispatch appropriate responders, and then answer non-emergency public safety calls. In effect, we are the city's public safety 24/7, 365 emergency operations center. Obviously, this mission is a crucial part of the emergency preparedness key priority. Additionally, because we work directly to maintain the public safety, we have a part in complete neighborhoods. And finally, because we provide the same standards of service to all callers throughout Multnomah County, we are working toward equity and opportunity. Recently, as part of an annual revisioning process, our executive team took the opportunity to think about what our mission actually means for our employees. What we came up with as a very rough concept is the following: BOIC's size in relation to our responsibility over public assets is, we believe, unmatched in the city. We are a bureau of 143 people, 107 or so who are certified by the state of Oregon to provide emergency communications assistance. If we count apparatus and personnel, every certified operations telecommunicator has some responsibility for the deployment of more than $35 million worth of city assets every single shift. This means that operations supervisors oversee the movement of more than $300 million per 10-hour shift. And quite frankly, the number of key decisions made every day on the operations floor is impossible to know. But based on the number of calls handled and the typical decision points necessary to handle each call appropriately, it is certainly in the tens of thousands. Thinking about our work in this way and with a little bit of distance from it has really given me pause. I knew that what we did was important and serious, but this perspective and articulation really highlights for me the criticality of making sure that BOIC has adequate funding for full staffing at the recommended 120, not the current 107, telecommunicators, adequate training, and the right equipment and facilities. Obviously, we believe that all of our requested decision packages are important, but the ones I would like to highlight most, because they're the ones that have the greatest impact to our actual mission-defined service delivery, the CAD server refresh, and the three supervisor positions. The CAD server refresh project was submitted for $1.4 million one-time funds. It is imperative that these machines be replaced at this time. Significant delay increases the risk of a system-wide failure impacting emergency response. They were originally purchased in 2008 during the CAD implementation and have been online since early 2011. Just as with any kind of technology, these servers have aged, and keeping them running at optimum levels will cost more and more. Additionally, new servers will be more in line with the equipment that will come online for PBB in April with their new records management system. BOIC and BTS agree that the new server system will result in improved vendor support, both from the commercial vendor and BTS, at a reduced cost, offer increased reliability and availability for incident processing, and reduce the frequency and length of planned downtime for system maintenance. And this project was submitted in the major maintenance and asset replacement project and does qualify for the current fiscal year set aside funds.
Lisa?
Yes, sir.
Is it true that
Also, the upgraded system will, in the event of an event like an earthquake, automatically transfer the CAD to the backup trailer?
It's not an automatic backup, but it does provide us with options about where we're going to take our disaster recovery to. Right now, we would be on cards with paper, and there would be no MDTs provided the MDT system, the radio system, was up. So it does provide us more options. The three additional supervisor positions, two in operations and one in training, $77,000 each for $233,000 ongoing. These three positions are critical in our ability to improve service delivery and will have a positive effect on operations. The additional supervisors on the operations floor will allow us to decrease our use of supervisory overtime as we replace staffing for vacation or sick time the way we do in our current model. But more importantly, it allows us to do more proactive supervision of floor staff in real time rather than always operating in a reactive mode. The additional supervisor in the training office will directly impact our ability to meet the most significant item in the 2013 audit by adding capacity to deliver ongoing training for currently certified staff. One of our goals for all three additional positions is that they will impact our operator retention issues by ensuring that our staff are as well-trained and supported as we can possibly make them. With regard to our other requested decision packages, we've requested $200,000 one-time dollars to fund the next phase of the 311 project. And this money will allow us to hire a subject matter expert to develop an RFP for the required computer system and software. We requested $1 million one-time dollars to fund the purchase and installation of new operations floor furniture. Since this equipment is in use 24/7, it suffers three times the wear and tear of normal office environment. And in 2013, we spent $5,000 on labor costs to repair problems and were often obligated to temporarily place key positions out of service until they could be repaired. As the furniture ages, the motors and parts that operate the ergonomic functions are breaking down more and more frequently. And Commissioner Novick has already directed us to get a more reliable costing number to assist you in making a decision about this package. Finally, we requested a little over $77,000 in ongoing funding for a third person in our CAD office. Council approved authority for the position in the 14-15 budget, and we're carrying it currently as a limited term position. It's critical to our maintaining the required 24/7 on-call presence. As always, we have new technology on the horizon, next-gen 911 and text to 911, as well as location issues, which you may have read about recently. We address these as we can. Most of them are actually private enterprise vendor issues or those managed by the state, and we will keep you apprised as they move forward into the budgetary and service provision realms. With regard to equity and the need to provide city services no matter who the caller is, our mission, again, is to provide the service to all callers in the Multnomah County response area, not just the city of Portland, equitably and to the best of our ability for each and every contact we have or incident we handle. Thank you again for your time and for the work you do in making these very difficult decisions. If you have any questions about my presentation or our key performance measures, I'd be happy to try and address them for you.
I have two. And first of all, I think on the surface, Lisa, your performance indicators look very compelling. But I'm going to make a standing request for all of these that we get some feedback following these budget workshops on how these were arrived at and what the benchmark actually means in relative terms. So 20 seconds, 60 seconds, 90 seconds. How did you choose that benchmark? Yep. And is it an industry standard? Is it mandated by law? Is it best practice? I think you have a chance to educate us
sure.
on that. I'm interested. But I want to just ask you an equity question that may cut through this, which is, do the response times that you track in the aggregate change dramatically by zip code? In other words, are there areas of the city where, like East Portland, for example, or other places where, by virtue of where you live, you're likely to get a less reliable response for whatever reason?
That is an excellent question. I would say that with regard to fire and medical responses, it's probably equitable everywhere because there are so many fire stations around, and they're everywhere. EMS, AMR, the commercial vendor for Multnomah County Emergency Medical Service, posts their ambulances. So as ambulances move throughout the system, the response system, and they're dispatched on various calls, they are backfilled in. So they're always, they have a map that they're always keeping the right number of ambulances available to respond to calls. For PPB, that would be a question around how big their precincts are and how big the districting in each of the different precincts is.
Well, and I would say that from an equity point of view, if there was some significant deviation attributable just to zip code, I think that would be an interesting way to disaggregate the data to see, because otherwise what we're looking is, you know, in the whole, in the main, what's the response time, but it doesn't tell us if there's an anomaly.
Right.
And from an equity point of view, that may or may not be useful information.
Right. Lisa, and if I just may break it, from BOEC's perspective, though, in terms of our answering calls and doing dispatches, there's no reason there'd be any geographic disparity.
That's correct. Just for your information, and next year we will provide this as written documentation, the first measure, the performance on 911 calls answered within 20 seconds, that is a national best practice standard. It's set by NENA, which is the National Emergency Number Association. It's one of two professional associations that telecommunicators can belong to.
The answered mean you get a live person or you get the first recording?
The answered for us means that you first hit our phone switch. But the way that our phone system works here in Portland is we have what's called an automatic call distribution system. And so as soon as it hits a switch, it goes to the next available operator. So, and they, 911 calls bump through the queue for they go to the top of the line for everything. And the operators have no control. They don't push a button or anything. It drops into their headset. The other three measures for police, fire, and EMS response were set by our user board, which is made up of our various configurations of our 14 partner agencies of seven jurisdictions. I think it's seven.
So speaking of those, if you look at not just the summary table here, but go back to the longer-term graph on percentage of priority dispatch calls for the police bureau.
Mm-hmm.
It was running 90% pretty consistently for 5 years, and then it dropped down to 70. And now you're on a comeback. What happened there?
Commissioner Fritz could probably answer that question. We implemented a new CAD system.
Ah, that's the new CAD system.
Because police is a significant amount of our call volume, it really slowed us down. We took a hit on that
All
one.
All right, that's helpful.
You're saying it had nothing to do with the election of a new mayor?
Absolutely nothing. No, absolutely nothing.
No, I'm only blamed when the graphs go the wrong way. I'm not lauded when they go the right way. So that, sure, that's the cost of disruption, which is what that shows.
Right.
So,
yeah,
I didn't really track what you were saying about text message receipts and all the other the location, geographic location.
Right. There is a project out there in the ethers called NextGen 911, and it is the new, just like the FCC had us all change our TVs from analog to digital, the same thing is happening in computer, any kind of computer technology-based system. So we're going from the old landline system where everything's transferred by an actual line of copper to these IP-based, it's called an ESINet, the Emergency Services Interface Network, I think. I don't know exactly what the I stands for. But it's going to change the way we do 911. It's going to allow texts. It's going to allow video. It's going to allow clothing will be able to contact us. If you are a certain kind of patient, you can enter your clothing, and it will let us know, just like OnStar does right now with vehicles, that you've been involved in an accident. Your clothing will be able to talk to us. So that's out there. It's not here yet. It is something that's managed by the state, and they're a little bit behind in their project. So the next thing for us is probably text to 911. where we implement a fairly cheap solution to allow us to make contact with our hearing and speech impaired community and answer phone calls based on texts.
You mentioned something about, it was also a question of vendors. I mean, are there private vendors that are offering these services?
Yes.
To 911 systems now?
Yeah, text to 911 is actually, there's about two or three vendors out there who are promoting a product that, like I say, it's fairly cheap. We're researching into that right now. We had been waiting on the state to act. They're a little bit behind, so we are investigating the possibilities of moving forward because the state of Washington is moving forward. CRESA across in Vancouver is going live probably this fall, maybe as soon as this summer, with a text to 911 capability. And because our border is so fluid, Commissioner Novick and I agree that it's important that we at least investigate what we can do to be ready for that.
Lisa?
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Natty. Question on the hiring and staff retention.
Yes, sir.
When it takes a year and a half to 2 years to train somebody, and then you say an average career length is only 2.5 years. Now, mean motor median, that's probably mean. You must, I'm guessing, have a staff that is 70 or 80% there for a much longer period of time, and you lose people when you're training them?
That's correct. Yes. We have, if a person gets past the 7 year mark, they're probably a lifetime employee.
They're a lifer.
Yeah. But it is a challenge to get them up there to seven.
That was my next question. Mm-hmm. And the idea of having a better training supervisor, I'm sure you hope that you are going to have greater retention. Can you give me a little bit of feedback why you should expect to have better retention if somebody can be a why?
Sure. In a lot of HR surveys, the person most important to an employee is their direct supervisor. And what we do is through that first year and a half to 2 years, those people are supported continually. They have a coach. They have a supervisor on the operations floor. They have a training supervisor who can manage, and they have a training department who manages their welfare through that period. Once they get certified, they're pretty much on their own, as was pointed out by the previous audit. We want to change that. We want to make sure that somebody is addressing their training needs, their operational questions, everything, so that in that period from 2 to 7 years, we can get them so that they feel that they're working in a very supportive environment.
Hi there.
Are these times, or how are these times impacted by somebody using TDD or somebody who is, when you have to transfer it to language line, or how does that impact?
Right. We measure the 911 entry time does stop when it comes into our system. So it's not that. The depending on the priority of a call, as soon as we know that we have a real incident, we can dispatch on it right away. And our people are pretty good about knowing that even though I don't have all the information, I'm going to dispatch. And so we, as long as we have a location and a call type, we can start the dispatch. And so that shuts our clock off because we're only measuring the time it takes BOEC to handle the incident until it's dispatched. So a language line transfer, they can know within 10 seconds that they're going to need language line help. And we have a direct connection. Our contract specifically says, because 85% of our calls are Spanish-speaking, our contract says we get a Spanish-speaking translator on answer. We don't have to go through somebody and say, I need Spanish or I need whatever. So at least we're able to get the Spanish-speaking population handled. And then if we have to go find another interpreter, that could add some time to it. But if we can get an address, we're still on our way. And there are technologies that help us get addresses. Now, speech-impaired and hearing-impaired, we do have... our phone system automatically takes TDD calls, telecommunication device for the deaf, if that's what the person is using. But that technology is going away because more and more people are relying on their cell phones. So there's kind of a trade-off on that one.
So where do you then go with the cell phone? Or how does...
A cell phone does not come into the 911 center. Right. They go...
Where they go?
they just go into the oblivion because we don't have the capability. So that's what we're working on with these private vendors to try to get the text to 911 option.
So changing gears entirely, I had a question about supervisors and span of control. I mean, mm-hmm. I was trying to infer from the document, what is the existing span of control somewhere between 10 and 17 or?
It's a 10 to 12.
10 to 12. And uh-huh. and so what is your target span of control and what is that target number based on?
We would like to be at the FEMA recommends, the Federal Emergency Management mm-hmm. Agency recommends a 5. We'd love to get to 7 or 8.
Okay.
So I want to call everybody's attention to 311 because I agree with all of the city budget office's recommendations except for that one. And it's a $200,000 ask. And basically, colleagues, we have to decide, are we going to do this or are we not going to do this? We keep investing fairly significant amounts of money. $200,000 is a significant amount of money. And so CBA says until the council decides, are we going to do it or are we not going to do it, we shouldn't keep investing. The challenge will be that if we decide we're not going to do it, when a future council decides they're going to have to, because that's what the entire world is going to, then we're going to have to start right back at the beginning with the initial studies and the scoping and the consultants and such. So we'd be basically wasting the amount of investment that we've made. But that's a policy choice that I agree with the city budget office we should make in this budget. And if we're going to do it, then we need to budget for that over the next 5 years and do it.
Questions for Lisa?
So back in the fall, Bob, you received some funding to repair the roof.
Yes.
And not everything that you asked for. And I think council asked you to take $500,000 out of your contingency and asked you to potentially have some conversations with partner jurisdictions. And then you also have a request in here for some of the operations furniture, you know, that you talked about as well. And I think there may have been some further conversations about that. And I think it may be good just to update the budget committee on where those stand in terms of what our partner jurisdictions fund and what they don't.
I'm going to defer that to Mike Mishner.
And we actually have not had those conversations with our partner jurisdictions yet. It's going to be a bit of an interesting conversation because historically we have not asked them to contribute to capital costs, and they're going to ask, okay, even if we help you out with this, then does that mean that we're expected to take a share of capital costs in the future? And they're going to argue that they don't see in the existing IGA that we have the right to ask them to do that. There's also a conversation to be had with BTS, which on the roofing issue, because they occupy 60% of the building. So we're going to have a conversation with them about whether they can take up some of the cost of the $500,000 that wasn't funded.
Yeah, and thank you, Commissioner. And that's what we were raising was, you know, let's at least revisit the question. And hopefully, when the time's right, have that conversation with our partner jurisdictions. It sounds like we may not have the legal sort of authority to demand the money. And the question is it time to revisit that? Or is council fine continuing what's really been the longstanding practice, which is that the city picks up the capital costs of running a 911 system and our partner jurisdictions share the operational cost?
Just a comment on the 311 issue. Our consultants recommended a total cost of implementing 311. Their guesstimate was $14.6 million over 5 years, which includes personnel costs. And their estimate was that if we transferred customer service personnel from existing bureaus to 311, the cost would drop to $4.8 million over 5 years. And I believe most other jurisdictions that have implemented 311 have shifted personnel over to the 311 center. Leah Treat says that 311 was very important in Chicago, where she came from, and she has said that from PBOT's perspective, she agrees that it's really important, and she's prepared to shift some of her people over to 311. But that's a conversation we're going to need to have with all the bureaus.
Yeah, I think, the one thing that I think is essential to before we move ahead on the money is to figure out the labor issues, because it's rife with them. And there's no point in saying we're going to go ahead and do this and then run into one labor issue after another that, bites us in the ass every part of the way we go. So that's the feedback I gave when we did the feasibility study too, is you've got to come back with the labor issues figured out before we plunge $14, $8 million into a system.
Well, as Commissioner Novick just said, it would be 4.8, because we would be intending to transfer our staff. They would still be doing the same job that they essentially are doing. So I think that is something to look at as we go into bargaining again to see which bureaus would not allow a transfer. But now is the time to decide, are we going to do that or not? And I inferred from Commissioner Novick that he's still interested in doing it. I'm still very interested in doing it.
Gone anymore for Lisa?
Actually, I did have one more point to raise, Mayor, which is that one equity issue is the composition of our workforce, and I just wanted to ask Lisa to hold forth on what she thinks that we can do to improve the diversity of the BOEC workforce.
Yeah, that's a problem that we've been working on for years. Our training manager goes out and recruits everywhere people tell us we should go to. And we've recently converted a management analyst position to doing outreach. And we're working with Dante's office and Oni to find out where we should be making contacts and actually letting people know that we are not the police. We are there to help. We want to help everybody. And part of it is, you know, we've got to let people know that it's a great place to work, and it's a real good place to help your community from. And so that's the kind of person we need to get in there, is somebody who understands public service and wants to help their own community, wherever that is and whoever that is. So
it's really challenging, because Lisa and I worked on that when I was in charge, and we have recruiters going regularly to Madison and Marshall High School when Marshall was open, of course. And this is a rare job that all you need is a high school diploma. In fact, Lisa tells me that she'd prefer, in some cases, that trainees had not had some kind of other kind of training, because we have a way that we do it in BOEC, and we like to train our folks there. And how much did they make to start off with, Lisa?
It's a lot. I don't want to give a bad number, but I think it's like more than $20 an hour.
It's way more than minimum wage, isn't
right.
it? Yes.
Absolutely.
So
oh, yeah.
For any young person who's looking at graduating from high school this year in Portland, or anybody who knows anybody who's going to graduate from high school in Portland, tell them about the 911 Center. It's a wonderful place to work.
Commissioner, there's something I've been meaning to ask you in your capacity as Parks Commissioner to help us with that, which is, there's a movie with John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton called Pushing Tin, about the life of an air traffic controller. And I think actually the life of our BOEC folks is a lot like the life of an air traffic controller. So if you could show Pushing Tin during movies in the park and then have an announcement afterwards saying, we have a job like that in the city, it's a job at BOEC, I think that would really help us recruit.
Who says the bureaus operate in silos? You see, this is the kind of, I apologize for asking you this question, because you were about to bring your 30-minute presentation in within 60 seconds of the allotted time, so I'm sorry to blow the schedule. But one thing that the equity team at VES has recommended, this is Marvita's, one of our ad packages this year, is to actually go upstream and go into the schools earlier and develop relationships, internships, establish relationships, so that when they're graduating and at their job fair, we already have established relationships, and we've started sort of cherry picking people that have the interests and the talent and that get good reviews internally. And I think each of us here has a hell of a story to tell to some high school student about a career in our bureaus, and not the least of it is the potential for professional growth, a very good healthcare plan, a pension, and other things. So BES has proposed to put more money going upstream, mm-hmm. and getting people in and hooked into the culture and build relationships, so we have a better chance of landing the quality kids when they graduate. So mm-hmm. just an
Great.
Idea.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we've just recently hired this person into the outreach capacity in December, so we are still kind of defining that job's role. So that would be very promising, I think.
That's a great point. If you saw the 5,000 or 6,000 kids or 7,000 this year at the Career Expo over at the Convention Center, you know, that's the kind of encounter where you might reach somebody early enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Thank you. Anything else for Lisa?
Thank you all. And also, I'd like to extend my thanks to my team, Gary Bevins, Jenny Dupree, Shannon Carney. Thank you. Deb Hussey, who was our union rep on our BAC, and Katie Shriver from the Commissioner's Office. So thank you all.